Today, we're talking to Scott Smeester, founder of CIO Mastermind, about the isolation that CTOs feel and what to do about it. You're listening to Joel Beasley, Modern CTO.
I've been following you for a little bit on LinkedIn, seeing you pop up here and there. You know, I was LinkedIn stalking you, right? Of course, okay. As I do.
Yep. That's what we do.
Bio. That's what we do. There was a quote in there that said, you know, that you became driven to end the isolation technology leaders are often experiencing, that you had a frustration about that and then used that as like a driving factor for your life. Why do CTOs feel isolated?
Why do they feel isolated? It's because they are a lot of times, you know. Coming from our backgrounds, a lot we're stuck in cubicles or in server rooms, and we weren't forced to go out and network. We weren't forced to go out and prospect and find new business and have to be the person that has the gift of gab, blah, blah, blah. We didn't have to report our sales numbers to a CEO, and when they're not good, how to bullshit your way through that kind of thing or whatever else. We were generally introverts, and we feel more comfortable behind our keyboard and our monitor than we are out in front of people, right? So that tends to have been what creates the initial isolation. But the other thing is that, you know, as a leader, if you're a CIO or CTO, you're in a company, you're busy, you've got a lot of demands. You're automatically isolated because there's nowhere for you to go to get information. You can't go up. You can't go down. You know, if you go down, you don't look like the leader. In either case, you don't look like the leader you need to be. So you're not going to find it within your company. You're not going to find what you really need in your company. So you got to go out. And I know that a lot of CTOs and CIOs go to things like these conferences at AWS and things like that. The reason we created it is because we wanted to have a place where they could have conversations about their specific challenges and problems with a group that's already been vetted too, for that matter. That's what you see a lot of, you know. They're isolated because they're in this position now, and they just don't have, and they haven't created, a network that they can go to. Maybe if they did, it's still hard to manage that, you know, like, what are you going to do? Put together a meeting? You're going to become a CIO mastermind and vet people, always finding new good people, always having, you know, the meetings scheduled and taken care of. Our people just have to show up and go through their 2 hours and then they get away. So that's kind of what I've seen.
I like what you said about you're not going to find exactly what you need in your company. It's like you can find the right question within your company, talking to the people above you or below you, figuring out what the right question to ask is or what the right outcome is that needs to be achieved. You can do that without looking silly. You can just be professional and inquire about it. But you can't, you got to be careful about how you ask them for the answer. If you do ask them, you'd be like, well, what do you think the answer might be? And they might say something, but you definitely can't ask them like, hey, I need the answer.
Yeah, right.
You want to go do that with your peers, right?
Yep. Yeah. Indeed.
It's not what you say, it's how you say it, right?
That's right. That's too funny. That's good.
Where was there a time in your life when you realized, oh man, the way I'm operating right now isn't working out. I need to learn to become a better listener.
Wow. Be a better listener. It was there's so many different times that's happened. You know, it's not just one time where I've had to. I got my start in about 1997. I created a company called the Internet Design Firm, TIDF.com. I still own a four-letter. I own two four-letter domain names. .com, one of them. TIDF. Yeah, that's pretty cool. .com. And that was in 97. That was in during the kind of the internet bubble craze. And I started a company, moved it downtown Denver. I was in my mid to late 20s at the time that I did all this. Needless to say, I wasn't making very good decisions and things like that, as far as a business owner is concerned. And I was caught up in the internet bubble. There's no end to money, you know. So anyway, I ended up making all kinds of bad decisions and got office space I didn't need. I had employees I didn't need. And then the internet bubble burst. I find myself, you know, needing more business. And at that time, I was looking to hire a salesperson. I'd failed at hiring salespeople. That's one of the hardest things to do, really. Mm-hmm. But I ended up hiring a sales coach at the time. This was in about 2002, and I paid her a bunch of money, and I got a lifetime seat to the sales training thing. And we'd meet, like, she'd have things once a week, and you could go and work out. Well, that's when I pretty much learned that, you know, I learned questioning techniques. I learned all different kinds of things to sell, learn sales processes and things like that. But I didn't actually learn really how to listen. If and when you learn how to listen, that is selling, by the way. Like, that is the core of selling, is listening. And so when did that come about? I don't know, but I'm in my 50s now, probably came around 49 when I was 49. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
This week. It was this week.
Yeah. It was, you're reminding me right now. No, so, I mean, I value, yeah. It's just something I think for me, I matured into it.
Yeah. Listening for that one moment where you can figure out the one thing that they actually want. I found that people often, in conversations, for example, we sell podcast production services, right? So companies come to us and they talk about making their show. And so the first thing I'm trying to figure out is, like, what do they want? And, like, what do they care about? And right. Are we at the point where they know what they want and what they care about? Or are we at the point where they're trying to articulate what they want and what they care about? Because that shows, like, two different paths for the sales process or the line of questioning. So yeah, it's about listening. And then the hardest part, all right, so I started to get some experience. I said, oh, this is good. And then obviously everyone always has things to work on. So the thing that I had to learn that cost me a lot of money before I learned it was not talking through the sale. So the moment that someone's like, yeah, we're doing it, I shut down that conversation as fast as humanly possible. Because after someone's agreed to do it, the yes. only thing you can do is shut say something. Up. Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you don't shut up, there's only one option. It's you're going to say something stupid that loses the deal.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my, like, God. That's a big one.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm so glad. This is great. I'm going to have an awesome weekend. I can't wait to go play for that team that no one likes. And then they're like, wait, what? You like that? Like, what's going on?
Have you ever been on the other side of it when you're dealing with somebody who's serving you? And they got you sold and you're like, yep, I'm in. Let's go. And then they keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start at, wait, do you really understand where I'm? Then you have those doubts again, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I think you go to deeper and darker doubts after you've been sold, you're ready to go. And then they keep talking. You're kind of like, wait a minute, it doesn't sound like you know what I'm talking about. So
yeah, is my judgment messed up now? Did I make a bad decision?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Is this the decision I should make to, did I make a bad decision? You can go there real fast.
That's right. Really.
So tell me about CIO Mastermind.
So CIO Mastermind is something that I created about 6 years ago when I was doing a lot of CIO, CTO type consultation work, whatever, fractional work, if you want to call it that. And I just started getting bigger and bigger deals come along, like just these, a freight company came along, $215 million freight company, and I started to think, you know, how can I do this the best? How can I actually make a difference in this company or any other company that I'm talking to and working with? And we still are. But what I needed at the time, I started thinking to myself, what I really needed at the time, and I still think the industry needs it really bad, is a place where we can go to help eliminate the noise in technology and in what we're doing and becoming a better leader. And so I started floating that around to a lot of my contacts. Now, I am a CIO and CTO. I have a degree in engineering. I call myself a geek with executive tendencies. I love the technology. I love programming. I'd rather be the introvert stuck in my office programming or not program. I don't program, or I used to, but I don't that much anymore. But I've always been kind of in my own business. I've had some type of a company in the technology B2B space. And so I have contacts and I have people that I know that I just started floating my problem with. I'm like, I really need kind of some help. And one guy was like, you ought to just put together a mastermind, or you ought to put together a peer advisory group, try to get some people here in Denver to sit down with you. And I was like, that's it. That's exactly what I need. Because if I can eliminate the noise, if I can have some time with another unbiased professional, unbiased subject matter expert that's not surrounded by a vendor sponsored event, it's not a forum talking at me, it's not, you know, and that's the other thing, is I was always getting talked at on all these things. So I'm like, you know, if I had a place where I could spend some time going into the challenge and the problem that I'm going through, have somebody listen, a subject matter expert, one would be great. 3, 4, 8 would be the best, because then I could have people thinking and talking back and forth and even, you know, working with each other to help me make sure that I'm like on the right track. And so I was like, that's what I need. I need somewhere I can eliminate noise and just really help me get the information I need. Because if I could do that, then it's something that I can take to the bank. I can trust it. I can work with it, and I believe in it, and I'll go hard at it. I won't need to doubt what I'm doing, because those people took time to hear me out, ask me questions, understand the context of what we're doing, and then give me advice. And it's in a forum that's vendor free. It's not sponsored. There's no, you know, we're not talking technology. Most of the time we're talking concepts. And I'm like, that's what I need to do. So I started CIO Mastermind, and it's about that. It's literally about bringing IT leaders, technology leaders together to work out their own problems and challenges, and to make sure that it's done in a way in which they have number of voices to listen to. They've got the time, 45 minutes to an hour in the quote unquote, you know, hot seat type of thing, where they're, you know, they can explain what they're going through, the biggest challenge that they're going through, get asked questions to make sure everyone understands, and then they speak into it, and then they have some really good information. So that's what CIO Mastermind is all about and why I created it.
That is pretty cool, man. I was a part of a business group a little bit ago. It was a Christian's business group called like C21, and they were that format. And I thought it was unique when I ran into that format, because it was less about topic of the day. This month we're talking about this, and we're going to all share our story. And it was more centered around, like, holistically, is your life in alignment? And then in your business, you know, what are you experiencing, and what's the big thing that you can do? And then, you know, you had business leaders, but yeah, I like that. And is it only in Denver, or is it?
Nope. When COVID hit, we went national. Our meetings are online. We started for the first year and a half to 2 years before COVID hit. We did meet in Denver in person downtown. But then I mean, COVID allowed us to go national. And then on top of that, after COVID, we were just like, how could we ask a, you know, in our two, the very first two people that signed up, one's in Greeley, which is almost an hour north, and another one is in Centennial, which is about 35 to 45 minutes south of downtown Denver. And so we were asking them to come once a month to this, so they'd have to spend that much time on a road. That's not fair to really ask their company to send them on, you know, to do that. So we just were like, we're just going to do our meetings online. They are formed all, you know, we got members all over the country now. So
nice. How many people are in a group?
We cap them at 12. You know, we got busy CIOs. A lot of times someone can't show up. So normally what happens is about eight to nine people are showing up to a meeting, and that's about the perfect size.
And then do they each get an hour at that meeting?
Oh, no. Well, what we do is we find two individuals who would have challenges and problems that we can work on. And then they get 1 hour per.
So if I'm having like a really difficult, like I'm CIO of IBM and I'm having like a crisis moment, I might, you know, get that answered.
That's right.
That week. Okay.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And we find, you know, we allow people to say, hey, to raise their hand and say, I'd like to get the group's attention this week. Or, you know, we get together and then we just go around the table and, you know, we say, what's going on in your world? What's going on in your world? And we can always find some challenge to work on. So yeah, it's never hard to find a topic.
So what's the themes right now? You've got multiple groups. You see these leaders, these CIOs, CTOs across all these groups. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some trends that you're picking up on what they're talking about and thinking about.
Well, beyond like the problems and the challenges that they have for AI, right? Or AI or any new technology that's coming, or, you know, a year or two ago, remote work. Well, actually, when COVID hit, remote work. After a year of COVID or 2 years when people were going back, return to office type of things. The topics that we talk about are not typically really about technology. CIO Mastermind is not the place where you're going to go to learn about new technologies. I like hitting use cases and things like that to find how AI and to look at use cases and things like that. But that's not, again, me. I don't deliver content to the groups. The groups bring up what they need. A lot of times, though, what they're bringing up is if it is AI, it's how do I educate my constituency on AI? What are the use cases for AI? When should we be bringing it in? What kind of security things do I need to be thinking about with AI and confidentiality and all the different things that as a CTO or a CIO, you know, you're in the C-suite and CIO Mastermind, on that note, works with anyone with any title as long as they're the highest person within that company reporting into the C-suite or CEO or whatever it is. Hopefully not the CFO, but anyway. So a lot of the topics are about, you know, kind of leadership and getting buy-in or, you know, just working better maybe with your team, the executive team, or with your, you know, how to you know, work better with your team, the team that's below you, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it's not necessarily about one specific topic about technology.
Yeah. So how do you get buy-in? If I come to you and I say I'm a CTO, CIO at a company, and I'm trying to get buy-in for my leadership team, what type of ideas do you have for that?
Well, I have to understand it a little bit more first. Like, who are you having problems with? Who are you trying to sell first, right? I'm going to have questions. Who is this? Or at least this is what I hope. This is where we give time for our members to spend time. So they're going to have 5 to 10 minutes to explain their challenge. So they might be saying, hey, listen, I can't get the board to bite off on a budget item, a budget line item for, I don't know. Let's just say it was AR research or AI research. You know, we want to really delve into that. And I'm not getting them to buy in on that. a lot of times what happens is that CIOs and CTOs, based on their background, they come from programming. So they're stuck in a cubicle their early lives. And likewise with, CTOs or network administrators or anything like that. They come from a background of definitely not sales, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So they really have a hard, they've had a hard time, understanding, and how to approach something, how to approach it from a business standpoint, as opposed to technology. How do I approach this sales situation with my quote unquote prospects, intentions and their desires? Well, that's where a lot of discussion comes up. What does the board want? What has the board talked about? What have they bit off on in the past? So it really, that's kind of where there's no one pat answer at all on any of that, because you kind of have to look at situation by situation. But for the most part, when they're not able to get buy-in, they're usually presenting technology. They're usually presenting a solution that doesn't make clear to the person, quote unquote, buying, and how that aligns with the business strategy and their desires. That's where they miss it usually.
Well said. I missed it for quite a while. The first 17 years or so of my career.
Me too.
I just was engineering, and I would think that people would do things because they're logical. That was my argument. Oh, we use logic. Yeah, it's logical to do this.
Like I said, I have a degree in civil engineering. We're taught to, engineers are taught to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to sell, you don't answer a question. You ask questions.
And once I realized, when I wasn't, obviously people have these points, like I'm sure you did and I did, where we're trying to get what we want and we're failing. And then we start asking questions. We're like, why does this keep happening? The moment I realized that I had a deficit in sales ability, I started reading and watching sales guys, right? Like Grant Cardone, even the old ones from the 70s that are up on YouTube talking about selling encyclopedias.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, so I started learning from these sales guys about how to sell and how people think during the sales process. That helped me far more than just work. That helped me in my relationships. Which eventually became my wife. It helped me to understand that that there's a world of there's a whole magical, beautiful world called sales and training, and it's got its own rules and regulations, just like engineering does. And then to understand when to flip my mind into the, okay, I need to realize that if I'm trying to get someone to agree to something, that I can look at this through the lens of sales skills that I have. And I can walk. It's not, because when you're an engineer, you see it as like shifty or bad, or you're trying to convince people, or you used car salesmen. That's how I know your experience level's low. Because when you start to actually get into sales and learn it from these
real
sales masters,
sales.
It's you have a problem. How can I get you a solution? How can I be useful to you? And if I can't be useful, there's no reason to continue. Like, I'm going to go find someone else who I can be useful to. And that made life a lot better for me.
If you think about it, it is a form of engineering. You have to understand all the barriers. The farthest, how far can I go until it's a no? And then that gives you that barrier. It kind of tells you which direction you can go if you're asking the right questions.
That is exactly correct. And so when you're looking at people and their work, so aside from the sales aspect of just specifically getting a budget item approved, I think we covered that pretty well. When you're working, when you meet these CIOs and CTOs, what kind of disputes are they typically having with their executive team or the team below them? Like, what type of problems exist a lot there?
Probably most likely a lot of it. I know that there's a lot of contention, obviously, with cybersecurity, which I hate that word, actually, because there's no such thing as cybersecurity. There's business risk. And there's a certain amount of business risk that is associated with some type of a digital, initiative that we have. And then I think it's funny when like boards and or whoever, like we want to do this, you know, technology thing, but we need it to be secure. And you're like, well, it's built in secure, you know, security is built in. I mean, I don't even think about it anymore. It has to be. Yes, I will look at security and make sure, you know, we'll no. Actually, what we'll do is we'll find out our risk level. We'll find out our risks. And so anyway, contention between CEOs and CIOs. Here's what I find a lot of, actually. Like I told you, a lot of CIOs or CTOs report to a CFO, which I think is completely wrong, completely backwards, because a CFO basically exists to keep costs down, you know, keep that bottom line good for the CEO. Well, technology usually is more of a, you know, it has more risk. It's an investment. So I don't like that, but I see a lot of CEOs holding technology at arm's length. Still, they have the CIO report to a CFO or some other, you know, distant relationship down there. And no wonder this company isn't really leading with technology.
Reporting to the CFO, you see that happening a lot still today.
Less now. Yeah. Less now, but yeah.
Yeah. Is it typically at the bigger companies that are maybe owned by private equity and things like that, where the founder's gone?
You know, I see it more in mid-size. Okay. And when I say mid-size, we're talking 2,500 employees down to smaller, meaning 250. We don't really work with anyone below 250 employees. Usually that's kind of the minimum. But you'll see that a lot at those types of companies. A lot of times a CEO will also promote the wrong person just because the person was the most this person was very gifted technologically, but and then that was the reason to raise this person to a C-level position. A lot of times I see the wrong person in the spot, you know, just maybe they're not the wrong person, but they don't have the skills to navigate, the leadership position. And that's when you see a lot of those, you know, those types of situations where the CEO then pushes back and doesn't want to make the big decisions on technology.
Yeah. So if you're in that position, join a group and catch yourself up to speed before they realize they're incompetent.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. I mean, if you're not, I would just say to any technology leader, you know, if you don't have people that you can help eliminate the noise and again, get to the trusted and get to the information that's going to help you move the ball forward. And to me, that's eliminating as much noise in our industry as possible right now. I would just say anyone in that situation, That would be a good opportunity for group coaching. We offer coaching as well, executive coaching. So maybe that person, like you said, like yourself, who has no idea in sales, has never been in the C-suite, and literally does come from the cubicles or the server room. Get a coach, get some help. You know, every time you're going in to meet with one of your executive team, get a little bit of help, get an idea of what you should be doing. And then that just becomes kind of a routine, but a coach is really important too.
Yeah. They can spend, who's the coach? Is it your business partner, Joe?
Uh-huh. Joe comes from coaching. He's a fantastic executive coach.
Yep. Oh, that is awesome. It's a good partner.
And
to
so
have.
Is Doug. I have another guy, Doug, who we're working with. And he is a very good executive coach as well, an advisor. So we have a lot of those kind of in our stable.
If I'm new to this and I'm considering a coach, what should I be spending? What's a good coach going to cost me?
It depends on how much you need, how much handholding you might need. You know, if there's a lot, it's going to be more, but you could get away with a couple of hundred. I would invest a, you know, at least a couple hundred a month. That's what I used to do back in the day, and I still do now. Actually, I invest a lot more of that now in various ways. I belong to business. I get business coaching now. I get business peer groups. And so, you know, and those are a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So what should someone spend? Someone's making, you know, a couple hundred K a year. What should they be spending on coaching? Like 10% of that, 5%?
I'd say, let's say it's 200,000. I would say a fair number would be about 10,000, you know?
Okay. So if you're out there making 200K a year and let me tell you what's going to happen right now. They're going to hear 10,000. They're going to say, well, I pay 2,500 to go to Amazon's AWS conference. I pay 1,000 in books. That is not what we're talking about. We're talking about like straight coaching.
Yeah.
Because going to AWS and seeing what's there, that is not the same as progressing your skills as a leader forward, correct?
Right, right.
Yeah.
I would argue, you know, I mean, I like the conferences. You get the, there's something you get by going to something like that that you can't anywhere else, except for you can get the knowledge anywhere. I mean, and that those types of things are a dime a dozen, you know. But what's really going to help you out and what's really going to help you navigate some of the intrinsic things that you just can't find, that you're not going to get at these, the people part of the people part of what we do, which is probably is as important as anything else as far as the technology. Again, see, we're not about technology. We're about the people part of business, literally, and the tech side, you know, tech people side of things.
Some of these guys that I know are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on coaching.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, think about it like this. I mean, if you're a professional athlete, your coaches are what make you. Like, that is true. And coaches are really important. Really important.
It's funny when I'll see executives and they'll say, oh, I got myself here. I can, you know, I'm doing just fine. Like, I can do this. I can get myself to the next level. Then you see professional athletes and they're just like trying to get the best coaches to surround them as possible to get that extra 1%. And then I see in business, the people who are making tons of money are just surrounded by absolute ninjas, straight assassins.
That's right.
At what they do. Yeah.
You've heard it probably. You become what you surround yourself with, the type of people you surround yourself with, and where you get your information from. I mean, that over my career and over my life, I understand more than anything. About 8 years ago, I joined a Rotary Club. I went as a guest to this Rotary Club. And at the time, I'm like, you know, I looked around, I'm like, well, what can I get out of here that I'm not currently getting in my life that I want? Well, I didn't have any seniors in my life. Like, not just, we're not talking coaches, but just senior professionals, people who are retired, not old, but just in that phase. And I didn't have any of that. My father had passed away. And so I was like, that would be something. And I'm not saying Rotary is old. Rotary is really cool. We had some in our group. We had a number of people. So I was like, that would be really good. The other thing is that this club, you know, international travel, that was what they were talking about. They were interested in that. They were doing projects over in Africa, over in Thailand and all. And they sent the president every year to the Rotary International Club. I'm like, I want more international travel in my life. Well, lo and behold, that's what I got. I became the president of the organization. They sent me to Hamburg, Germany. It was amazing. It was really cool. And I was just really excited about that. Yesterday in my business peer advisory group, I'm looking around. I'm like, I had just joined a couple months ago. I got back into this and I'm looking around the group and I'm looking around the table. And when they went around, they're all talking about, I swear, every single one of them either talked about how they're running marathons and getting into shit. I mean, I'm not, like, one of the guys is a bodybuilder. He goes on stage and he, you know, the shows the, you know, what do you call that? I can't remember. Not just a bodybuilder, but they perform and shows
Josh
off.
Josh does that. That's Josh's hobby.
Really?
No, but if you meet Josh in person, he's like huge and jacked. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to myself, health has been something, I mean, I work out a lot too, but I'm carrying a little bit more weight than I want to at this point. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't need to be a marathon runner. I don't have no desire to run a race or like that or compete, but I'm surrounded by really healthy individuals. They all take that very serious. And every one of them was talking about how they're going on a trip to Italy or to something else. And I'm like, this is a good spot for me to be again, because I'm going to get healthy just by being around these folks. And I'm going to get, because that's what they find important. And I know that. I was excited about being in that group.
Nice.
Yeah.
How often does that group meet?
Our peer group meets once a month, but the group that I'm involved in, the larger organization as a whole, also meets once a month. So I'm kind of getting around those folks twice a month, one on a big meeting that we meet up at the aquarium downtown in Denver. Oh, nice. For once a month, and then another one for our peer groups as well. And then I'm going to consider getting on committees and stuff like that too.
Oh, nice. Well, we make it out. My family makes it out to Denver about once a year. So yeah. When we're out there, yeah, we like to, we do the RV camping thing, and they've got some nice campgrounds out there. We're in Tennessee, yep. Like Nashville. And
cool. Love it.
Yeah. And we like to go out there in the summer because it's like 50 degree nights, you know, and the sun here, the summer is a little bit hotter. So it's a nice place to be.
Let me know when you're coming out. We'll hook up.
Yeah, for sure. We have like 5 minutes left before we do the wrap up recording thing. What is the most...
I have 4 minutes on my camera.
Okay, 4 minutes on the camera.
I looked at the time.
In the next 4 minutes, what do we have? What's the most valuable, potent information we can knowledge transfer to the next generation of technology leaders?
Learn how to deal with people. People are going to be is where the money is at in the future, for one thing. AI cannot be human. That's just no, I mean, it can act like a human, but it can't be human. So learn people, learn what makes people tick, understand how to, like you said, I like how you brought up listening. That listening is just key. And also asking questions, asking good, thoughtful, open-ended questions. It's one thing that drives me nuts about some of the, you know, one of the things that I implemented to our groups was we have a questioning round for the guest to go around and ask the person who's asking for help. They sometimes will, do you have this in place, or do you have, you know, it's a yes or no close-ended question. And that, again, that shows me how much. So I told Joe, our facilitator of the groups, I'm like, Joe, I want you to try to get them to ask open-ended questions. Help me understand a little bit about what you know, you can always ask, take a closed-ended question and turn it into an open, so that somebody else is going to, they go more into what they want to talk about. That also helps with, by the way, bonding and rapport. It really helps make a connection. And then when you're listening, there's nothing more important than that. So that's what I'd say. Literally just how to deal with people.
I like that. I think that's a really important aspect, especially with my transition. When I first went from individual contributor to team lead, you're interacting with the computer all day, issuing it commands, and it's explicit on its issues when the command doesn't work. Then you go interact with people, and that is not how people work. You could transmit information to people, and then you don't know how to process the response and what type of response you're going to get. So I learned that really quickly with my wife, right? I tell a computer one thing, it never forgets.
Right. That's right.
It tells me when there's a problem. My wife just... She tells me, but it's not an error code that's so explicit I know what to do with it. I'm getting better.
Sometimes you have to figure that out too. Sometimes, yeah, I mean, sometimes you make mistakes and stuff and people just, they don't say anything. It doesn't even bother them. But if it continues, it can become a problem.
I know. Sometimes I'm looking through the documentation. I'm like, I am a teapot HTTP error. That doesn't even make sense.
That's funny.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this episode useful, please share it with a friend or a colleague who you think would get value from it. And if you have topics that you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast, either add me on LinkedIn or send me an email, joel@moderncto.io. Every time I get an email or a LinkedIn message, it absolutely makes my day and inspires me to keep going.